From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cohen in for Terry Gross. On today's Fresh Air, the Pakistani band Janoon. They're one of the top-selling bands in South Asia, but their music is banned in Pakistan because it's critical of the government. Despite that, Janoon has gained an enthusiastic international following thanks to the internet and MTV. We'll meet two members of the band, guitarist Salman Ahmad and bassist Brian O'Connell. And classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz reviews two new reissues of Igor Stravinsky conducting his own music. That's all coming up on today's Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. The Senate has rejected a motion to open its deliberations in the president's impeachment trial. NPR's Mara Liasson reports.
Senators Tom Harkin and Paul Wellstone made the motion to open up the debate over dismissing the charges against President Clinton. Since their motion would have changed Senate rules, it needed a two-thirds vote to pass. But it failed 57 to 43. The senators will now debate among themselves whether or not to dismiss the case. That motion needs a simple majority to pass, and Republicans say they're confident they have the votes to defeat it. Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott and nine other Republican senators sent President Clinton 10 written questions. The senators want to know whether the president thinks that Monica Lewinsky was lying when she said the president touched her in ways that would qualify as sexual relations under the definition used in the Paula Jones case. The letter does not compel the president's answers, and the White House says he has no plans to respond. Mara Liasson, NPR News, The White House.
Emergency officials now say a powerful earthquake killed at least 165 people and injured hundreds more today in central Colombia. Authorities said the quake registered 6 on the Richter scale, reducing buildings to rubble and triggering landslides. They said the death toll could go far higher because details are still coming in from the region's provincial capitals. The quake reportedly flattened a 6-story building, a major hotel, and a theater in the city of Armenia. Rescue operations were hampered by the failure of telephone communications and landslides that blocked some roads. Pope John Paul II will address young people tonight in a mass in Mexico City. But earlier today, he met some of Mexico's wealthiest and most powerful people in a much more exclusive setting. From Mexico City, NPR's Philip Davis has more.
In the last full day of his trip to Mexico, the Pope celebrated Mass for 250 politicians, bankers, and leaders of charitable organizations at the Vatican's nunciate, or embassy, here. As part of a newly announced strategy for the 21st century, the Church is trying to galvanize wealthy countries and individuals to come back to the Church and do good works for the poor and dispossessed. The Church is also looking toward the youth of the world as a key part of its growth and survival, and this evening, more than 110,000 young people have gathered at Aztec Stadium for a mass and event billed as a meeting of the generations. Philip Davis, NPR News, Mexico City.
The city of St. Louis is preparing for tomorrow's visit from the Pope as hundreds of thousands of people gather to welcome him. During his 30-hour stay in the United States, the pontiff is to meet with President and Mrs. Clinton as well as gun control advocate James Brady. On Wall Street today, the Dow Industrials gained 82 points to close at 9,203 in heavy trading. This is NPR. Police in Vero Beach, Florida say at least one child and a truck driver were killed today when a school bus ran a stop sign and crashed into a tractor trailer. A sheriff's office spokesman said at least 14 children were hurt when the bus rolled over and landed on its side. The tractor trailer also rolled over at least once. More than 20 children were reported to be aboard the school bus, which was taking them home from two elementary schools. Former New Jersey Senator Bill Bradley kicked off his presidential campaign swing in New Hampshire today. From New Hampshire Public Radio, Av Harris reports.
With little more than a year remaining until the first-in-the-nation presidential primary, Bill Bradley is not wasting a moment to campaign. The former pro basketball forward is crisscrossing the state through the middle of the week, meeting with supporters and trying to give the public a clear understanding of his message.
It'll be related to trying to tap what I think is the untapped capacity of this country and in New Hampshire. and to turn the energy that's a part of that that we see every day in our economy or in our technological progress and turning it toward things that remain undone.
Bradley, who says he doesn't see himself running against perceived frontrunner Al Gore, acknowledged that it will take many more visits to New Hampshire to beat him. For NPR News, I'm Av Harris in Concord, New Hampshire.
International observers in the Serbian province of Kosovo say they've found the bodies of five ethnic Albanian civilians, including two children, who were gunned down southwest of Pristina. The Monitor said the two men, two boys, and one woman appeared to have been shot at close range. Ethnic Albanian news sources charged that the victims were killed by Serbian police. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Archer Daniels Midland Company, makers of all-natural vitamin E, ADM, supermarket to the world, on the web at admworld.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, sitting in for Terry Gross. Our guests today are musicians who sell millions of albums, though you've probably never heard of them. They're one of the top-selling bands in South Asia, and they're called Janoon. They live in Karachi, Pakistan, and their music mixes the ancient with the modern, Sufi poetry and the spiritual form of singing called Qawwali with the wailing guitar of American classic rock bands such as Led Zeppelin and Santana. Because of the political content of some of Janoon's songs, they're banned from performing in their home country of Pakistan. Terry Gross recorded an interview with two members of Janoon last October. Salman Ahmad writes the music for the group, and Brian O'Connell is a transplanted New Yorker who plays bass. Let's listen to something off their latest album, Azadi. This is based on a Sufi poem called Khudi.
Is pop music totally banned now in Pakistan?
No, Terry, I mean, it'd be wrong to say that pop music is banned. Janoon is banned. The way pop music is perceived by the establishment, it was, you know, non-political entertainment, you know? And what we did when we started the band back in 91, as our political awareness and consciousness grew, we started reflecting that in the lyrics of our songs. And in the beginning, since, you know, it was just a niche sort of a audience that we were playing for, it didn't seem to bother the establishment. But as the popularity grew and the influence grew over the people, 2 years ago, I would say, the establishment started taking very serious notice of our music. And we wrote a song called Accountability, which is about political corruption and... you know, made a video which kind of pokes fun at politicians. And that's when they started to sort of muzzle us. And now we're completely banned.
Was there like an official order that you got saying you weren't allowed to perform?
Well, the way they work over there is, you know, they're very devious in the sense that there is no written ban where, you know, Janoon is not allowed to play. It's just that the district administration refuses to give permissions for one reason or the other. And on television, they won't even mention our name on television, yet there is no ban. I mean, if I wanted to take them to court, the moment I take them to court, they'll run a song, and you know, it fizzles out. So there's nothing written, yet they don't let you. You know, you're not allowed to play your music.
Now, what about other pop music? Are there other rock or pop musicians that get played on radio or that appear on television?
Yeah, absolutely. Any pop music which is, you know, non-political. The lyrical content is non-political. You know, singing about sort of teenage love songs and stuff, you know, it's fine. That's not so much of a problem because you have to understand the genesis of pop music in Pakistan. before 1988, we had 11 years of military rule under General Ziaul-Haq. And during that time, there was no youth entertainment whatsoever. No clubs, no music. I mean, the most innocent sort of gatherings of young people would be, you know, you'd have all these Islamic, so-called Islamic parties coming in and breaking things and banning in the name of religion. And I think the military ruler, Ziaul-Haq, he manipulated that. He manipulated religion and Islam to just prolong his rule. So what happened was that from 77 to 88, people like me and other musicians, I mean, we were, you know, totally suppressed. We started playing music in our school. You know, just get guys together. And we'd play rock and roll, obviously, because, you know, it was the cool thing to do. And we had black market cassettes, which we used to listen to, of whatever the top 40 music was. And it just, we started getting a following. I remember the first time we did a concert, they were like, it was six people, you know, just friends. And yet, since there was no activity, just the word of mouth sort of grew really rapidly. And over between 83 and 88, you had a lot of these sort of underground bands, but singing really sort of, you know, soppy sort of music, you know?
Like what? Any American songs we'd know?
Oh, yeah. You know, Bruce, Born in the USA. So.
a song that had a lot of personal meaning to you, I'm sure.
I mean, so they actually, I think it got under their, back in 87, the big thing for Ziaul-Haq was to, you know, promote Pakistan amongst the youth. So I was in a band called Vital Signs. And, you know, we knew that, you know, our kind of music would never end up on television. There's no way, you know, because we, you know, used to wear jeans and, you know, kind of just be normal. And, you know, they wanted Pakistani youth to represent a certain sort of look, you know.
What look?
You know, traditional shalwar kameez, sort of, I think what they would say, what a good Pakistani boy should be like, you know the tenets of Islam and nationalism, you know, very pro-Pakistan, and he couldn't tolerate any dissent whatsoever. So this television producer one day, he came in, you know, he heard about us because we sort of were playing, you know, young people were talking about us. And he said, you know, there's a song contest on television. It's a national song contest, and I've heard that you guys, you know, you know, your music is good, and would you like to write a song? And up till then, you know, we hadn't written any original songs. We were just doing covers, English covers, you know. And we sort of laughed at him. He said, are you kidding? You know, how could we be allowed on television? He said, no, look, it's a national song contest, and it's a possibility the censors might overlook the fact that your appearance is, you know, not right because you're singing, you know, about the country. So we said, yeah, what the hell, you know, and we wrote this song called Dil Dil Pakistan, which means, you know, we love Pakistan. And that's what happened, actually. There were about 20 songs from all over, you know, traditional, which all had the same sentiment. And the censors sort of overlooked it because they said it's all, you know, patriotic music. So that song got on television. And it was basically a rock beat, you know, pop-oriented guitars and, you know. And the song went on to like, because there's only one state channel, that night people sat and they watched it, and it was, you know, about 50 million people who sat and watched the song. And overnight, I mean, it was like, you know, how the Beatles appeared on Ed Sullivan, you know?
So you started to become known by writing this little patriotic song so that you could get on television, and then what, later on you kind of switched and became much more critical in your lyrics and the government was offended?
Well, Terry, to be honest, I mean, none of us looked upon music as being, you know, as a career, you know? I mean, I was studying to be a doctor. I was medical college. The other guys were also, you know, looking at other careers because traditionally musicians are, you know, looked down upon in our society. You know, they're considered, you know, although there's supposed to be no class in Islam, but I mean, you know, our culture traditionally has looked down upon people who play music for a living, you know? And so long as it was a hobby, you know, it's all right. And that's how we were kind of fooling our parents and everyone. That's just a hobby, you know. We'll, you know, just do this for a little while and we'll get back to real life. So what happened was that this song, once it went on television, I mean, it shocked us at the response we got from young people. And the establishment looked upon it and said, okay, wait a minute. Let's not crack down upon it because they're singing about patriotism, you know. So they sort of didn't promote it, but they looked the other way, right? So now, in that time period, what happened was that a year later, Ziaul Haq's plane crash took place. He died, which opened the way for for elections. And that's when Benazir Bhutto came into power. And, you know, she was, we thought, a liberal, Western-educated woman who would really be able to turn things around. So the songs of that time, and because more and more pop music started getting on the waves then, right, reflected this sort of innocent, idealism, young people, you know, they want the country, you know, they love the country. And, but, you know, that sort of dream ended that same year, basically, because Benazir was as corrupt as Ziaul Haq.
Now that your band Janoon is banned from performing in Pakistan and you can't get on radio or TV, how do your listeners keep up with you? Is there a big black market for your records?
Well, no. I mean, we've actually, what they're trying to do, the government is trying to do, is starve us out. For the last 5 months, like I said, we haven't been able to play a single show. We don't make any money off album sales because piracy is, you know, there's 95% piracy. We're off television. So what we did do, finally, I mean, you know, it got to last month, we got this letter from the government saying that, they invited us. We were asked to appear in this hearing to answer charges against us of statements we made in India. Basically, you know, there were charges which amounted to treason. And so my whole thinking changed then. Up till now, I was just, like I said, I'm a non-confrontational person, I think, by heart. And I don't really like, you know, I don't want to be a hero. I don't want to become a martyr. But, there's so much interference that you have to, either you stand up to it or you get bulldozed. So we started this public campaign, which I just attacked the government directly. That, you know, they're the ones who are the hypocrites. They are the ones who are responsible for this economic catastrophe we're going through, yet they're calling us traitors, you know?
So what's the government's reaction to your return of their volley?
They're a bit nonplussed, actually, because, you know, the first thing is an artist is, you know, he's viewed as a mouse, you know, as a prostitute, you know?
Yeah, but if they view you as a little flea, what's the big deal of you sing songs against the government? I mean, if you're so unimportant... Why, really, and that raises a larger question. Why are they so threatened? Why is the government so threatened by rock and roll?
Because there's so much unrest in the country. There's so much unrest, and anything can incite that unrest. And you know, from the experience of the 60s, you know, the anti-Vietnam protests, that's what's happening in Pakistan now, 30 years later.
Salman Ahmad, the founder of the band Janoon, speaking with Terry Gross. Janoon is based in Pakistan and is the most popular band in South Asia. We'll continue after this break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with two of the members of the Pakistani band Janoon. Salman Ahmad is the founder and guitarist of the band. Brian O'Connell is the American bass player with the band. He now lives in Pakistan.
I don't know whether it's because you've been banned in Pakistan that you've been performing in other countries, but I know you've been performing in other countries, and you recently performed in India. And in fact, you were performing in India during the period that the nuclear tests were taking place in India and in Pakistan. And it was a period of increasing tension between those two countries. And there's already plenty of tension between India and Pakistan. So, Salman, what was it like for you as the leader of a Pakistani band to be in India as the tensions escalated during the nuclear tests?
Well, first of all, I mean, you know that before, I mean, we went to India, in my own lifetime, I've seen two wars between our countries. And, you know, you read the papers in our country about this propaganda about what India is like, and, you know, it's bombarded at you. And so when we went in April, I went there with a very open mind. You know, I wanted to see for myself that what this place is like. And it was really interesting because, you know, I saw a reflection of Pakistan in the Indians, you know, and Pakistanis in the Indians. And they, vice versa, you know. I mean, it was uncanny that how similar, you know, cultural similarities, apart from the majority religion, you know, Hindu in India and Islam in Pakistan, you know, the music, the movies, I mean, the jokes, everything, you know, because the same country which was cut in half. So I'd gone there not as a tourist but as an artist, and we happened to have the number one song in India at that time. So it was really funny. I mean, we were doing these concerts with 50,000, 60,000 Indians coming. And supposedly there's supposed to be this nuclear euphoria in the country and all this anti-Pakistan feeling, which was being projected on CNN, BBC. And it had nothing to do with reality, you see. The man on the street couldn't have been bothered of what Pakistan and Pakistanis are like. Similarly, it's the same case in our country. The man on the street, you know, he loves watching Indian movies, loves listening to their music. It's both the governments trying to, you know, project this specter, you know, a threat to keep their own sort of positions, you know.
I want to introduce the bass player from Junoon, Brian O'Connell. Brian O'Connell, I know that you met Salman while you were both studying in New York. What made you decide to actually move to Pakistan and be in a band together based in Pakistan?
Quite simply, after Salman and I parted ways in 81, he returned back to Pakistan and studied to become a doctor. I went upstate to become a music teacher. We kept in touch throughout that time. And he came back with this first Junoon album. He had done his national song with Vital Signs. He did their first album, and he decided that it really wasn't him, this kind of bubblegum pop music that they were making. So he wanted to take a risk, and he made a much more guitar-oriented album. This was Junoon 1. When he completed that, he brought it back to me in New York, and I listened to it. And I was amazed for a couple of different reasons. First of all, I really liked it compositionally. And I really liked the idea that this was a brand new form of music for Pakistan. So it was more than just offering the music. It was a whole cultural alternative. And at that time in 92, when Salman asked me to come over and help with the production of the second album, Talash, it was an easy decision for me because I was in a very routine, good, but mundane, secure job up in Buffalo, New York. And didn't have many other responsibilities besides that, so I figured a little vacation to see the other part of the world would be nice. So I decided to stay on and really enjoyed touring and playing and recording with Junoon and just became a part of it then.
How much music, how much rock and roll or pop was there to listen to, Salman, when you were growing up in Pakistan?
Well, Terry, I was lucky. I mean, when I was in Pakistan, I didn't hear a lot of it. I mean, a lot of the music I heard in Pakistan was, you know, traditional music, Qawwali, Indian film music, the Ghazal, which is a harmonium-based art form, tabla, love poems. But I was lucky that my father, who was in the airlines, moved to the States, and, you know, I moved and went to high school here. And you know, with Brian being in high school, and I was just knocked out by, you know, just the amount of music that was available to young people, you know.
So this was all new to you, this music?
It was unbelievable. I mean, you know, in our high school, we had about 10 bands, you know. And I saw all my sort of, you know, school friends, you know, playing music, and I just felt so left out, you know. I mean, Brian was my sort of idol, you know, in the sense, because, you know, he was playing guitar and, you know, all the girls used to be after him. So, I mean, that was, initially, it was just a very innocent sort of interest in music, you know. And once I talked to my mother, because I was afraid, you know, of bringing up the, you know, the question of buying a musical instrument, because, you know, it's just unheard of in our family. So I asked my mother, I said, you know, I'd like to learn the guitar. And contrary to what I thought she'd reply, she said, you know, okay, if you want to get one, you have to work for it, you know. So I bused tables at a diner and got together about $235, went and got myself a Gibson Les Paul copy. And that's where, you know, my sort of interest in the instrument started. And then I started listening. I was like, you know, crazy about it. I used to listen to Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy Page, all of Brian's records, you know, of Southern rock, and yeah, started imbibing all this information, you know. I mean, I was a complete Janooni, which means obsessive, you know.
Is that what it means?
Yeah. Janoon means obsession, you know.
So then you went back to Pakistan, and this music didn't really exist in any major way there yet.
Well, I'll tell you something really funny. My first year of medical college, there was a talent show, sort of, you know, for the first year class. And, you know, people were doing drama skits and, you know, telling jokes. And, you know, you had to get up and do something. So they said, you know, Salman, you know how to play the guitar, so why don't you go up and, you know, do something. So at that time, I mean, this was the 80s, Eddie Van Halen was the sort of rock guitar hero icon. So I went up and I played Eruption, which was, very well-known piece of his. And, you know, everyone started looking at me like, what the hell's wrong with this guy, you know? And I saw that movie, Back to the Future, in which Michael J. Fox goes up and plays that sort of guitar to the 1950s American audiences. And I was like, you know, that happened. Yeah, I mean, you know, I put my guitar down for 4 years because I realized, no, you know, it has no relevance here, you know? And it's just that out of, like I said, the suppression and of the military rule, that you had to do something just to sort of, you know, stay normal.
Salman Ahmad, the founder and guitarist of the Pakistani band Janoon, and Brian O'Connell, the American bass player with the band, speaking with Terry Gross. Their new CD is called Azadi. We'll continue this interview in the second half of the program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, booksellers since 1873. Online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN. And by the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, contrasting East and West rhythms, we continue our talk with guitarist Salman Ahmad and bass player Brian O'Connell of the Pakistani group Janoon. And classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz reviews two new reissues of Stravinsky conducting his own music.
Lajbal mere mujhe
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, sitting in for Terry Gross. Last October, Terry recorded this interview with two members of the Pakistani band Janoon. Last year, their hit song Sayane knocked Celine Dion out of the number one spot on MTV Asia. Because of their outspoken politics on and off stage, they are banned from performing or being played in their home country of Pakistan. Terry spoke with Salman Ahmad and expatriate Brian O'Connell.
Tell me a little bit more about the musical styles that you've combined, you know, elements of American rock and also of traditional Pakistani music. Let's start with the elements of traditional Pakistani music that you've included. You say that some of the rhythms are almost trance-inducing, did you say?
Mm-hmm. You see, there's a very, very rich heritage of folk music in the subcontinent. The different provinces, Punjab, Sindh, the frontier province, they have their own sort of, you know, basic rhythms. And I find that very, very fascinating. And I always used to think, you know, if you produce this sound, you know, brought it out into a more sort of, create a bigger sound and use rock music as in, you know, heavy guitars and, you know, bass and have these sort of soaring melody lines going in, you know, what it would sound like. And that's what we've done, really. It's evolved our sound. And I'm happy to say this last album, Junoon, Azadi, we got a friend of ours from New York, John Alec Robeson, who I sort of, you know, we talked about this vision of trying to create a big sound with the traditional instruments and the traditional rhythms and getting that trance-inducing thing.
Brian, as the bass player with Junoon, I mean, you have to supply some of the rhythm. Have you had to learn rhythms that are very different from the rhythms you grew up with?
Absolutely. The rhythms that we grew up with here in the States are very much straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I found so appealing about the rhythms that we have in the subcontinent. And the whole way a song is constructed, it's very different. The melodies are far more intricate. Harmony is very much a Western thing. So the melodies are very meandering, and the rhythms are much more intense. Now, me being a rhythm player, that excited me a lot, and it gave me a lot of freedom on this album, Azadi. We just used the tabla and dolak and the bass guitar as rhythmic instruments, so it gave me a lot of freedom, and it was also quite a challenge for me, to take everything I learned in my Western education, almost put that on the shelf a little bit, and just kind of find a different kind of freedom within this rhythm. It's been great.
Could you maybe tap or clap out, a rhythm that you often use with Junoon? That's
sure.
Different
I think
from what you're
I think
to.
A contrast from east to west, mm-hmm. is where in Western music, you accent on the second and fourth beat, like with a snare, like boom cha, boom boom cha, boom cha. It's very rhythmic. Now that you take that same beat. And over in the east, that snare, that two and four, happens a little bit earlier. So instead of boom cha, boom boom cha, it's now boom cha, a boom boom cha, a boom boom. And as Salman would describe it, gets your shoulders rolling a little bit more. It's kind of this anticipation of the beat. It rolls a little bit better.
It's interesting, really, that you know, the movement I find in the east happens in the horizontal plane. You know, I mean, people's the axes of movement. It's like Brian was doing, it's like a shuffle almost, but a more flexible shuffle. You know, it's going. Whereas a boogie rhythm would go, and it's vertical, you know. And If you go to a rock concert here, you know, people will, you know, they'll be going like this, you know.
Explain what you're doing. You're moving your head up
and
down.
Yeah, up and down, yeah. And where the rhythms that we play, and if you hear Qawwali rhythms, it's all going like this, you know.
Side to side,
the shoulder movement happening, you know. It's really interesting to see that happen.
Let's pause here. Salman, I'd like to ask you to introduce a track from your CD, Azadi. And choose the most popular track, the track that was the biggest hit, and tell us a little bit about the song and what the lyric translates to in English.
Okay, this is the opening track, and it's called Sayoni, which is a Punjabi term, which means my dear friend. And when back in May, this became the number one song in India. And the words of it are, there is no peace and there's no solution. Sayoni, sayoni, sayoni. And I was wondering, why is it that this song is resonating so deeply with both people in India and Pakistan? And that was the time of the nuclear blasts, you know, in both the countries. And when we went to India, we were just overwhelmed by just the spectrum of, you know, I mean, this song was playing in the rural areas. It was playing in sort of elitist areas. And everybody just, you know, caught onto that emotion where, you know, what's going to happen with us? And I think this song is about that question.
What's happening musically in the song?
Again, it's got that, what they call a dhamal beat, which is this, right? And a regular Punjabi beat. But what's different about it is that Brian's playing a bass figure, which is completely different to the beat. He's going do 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 do, a lot like the big band sort of music, you know. And if you get that Punjabi beat going with that shuffle, it makes for a very interesting groove, which we'll let you hear now.
It's right. Like Benny Goodman or Artie Shaw meeting Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan.
And this is Janoon. That's music from the Janoon album Azadi. Janoon is the most popular rock band in South Asia. They're based in Pakistan. My guests are the band's founder, Salman Ahmad. He's also the guitarist and songwriter with the group. And also with me is Brian O'Connell, who plays bass, and he's from America, although he now lives in Pakistan. I'm wondering if MTV has changed the pop music scene a lot in South Asia, because there is a South Asian MTV. So even if the state-sponsored television station refuses to play pop music or certain bands, you know, South Asia MTV is there. And
well, this is precisely what happened with one of our videos.
Yeah?
Yeah, they wouldn't show it on the local state-run TV. But everyone has a satellite dish now, so they're uh-huh. open up to the rest of the world. And when they saw our video Sayoni a few times a day, and the number one slot on MTV and Channel V, it got into their homes anyway. So by being banned from local television, local airwaves, we still climbed up the chart and maintained our number one popularity position. Rather ironic, much to the dismay of the people who are trying to prevent that.
Actually, too, that's a very interesting point. The biggest revolution that's taken place in the last 7 or 8 years has been, you know, satellite television. Because, you know, traditionally, 10 years ago, we had one state channel, and that was projecting what...
It's totally controlled.
Yeah, totally controlled. The moment satellite television came, it, you know, from people had access to all kinds of information. that's why the cynicism that's there now is grown, because people know what's happening in the rest of the world, and as opposed to what the government sort of projects. And I think one of the reasons why we're banned is because the government is losing control. The fear of losing control over young people.
Salman Ahmad, the founder of the band Janoon, speaking with Terry Gross. Janoon is based in Pakistan and will continue after this break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with two of the members of the Pakistani band Janoon. Salman Ahmad is the founder and the guitarist of the band. Brian O'Connell is the American bass player with the band.
I was reading a few articles about the band, and one of the articles described how you were playing a concert, and I forget if this was in India or in Pakistan. It must have been in India. And they said that it was in a fairly conservative town, and there were a lot of girls in the audience, teenagers who were dressed in veils, and they threw off the veils, during the concert, and in a kind of symbolic way. In other words, they were also like throwing off certain fundamentalist traditions as well, or certain traditions. And so I'm wondering if there have in fact been concerts like that, and if so, what it says to you.
Well, absolutely. You see, the great common denominator between rock music and Qawwali is this sort of communal feeling, you know? Like, if you go to a rock concert, people, you know, they move as one, you know? And it breaks down barriers. It's very liberating, rock music. And Qawwali, the poetry, it's about the celebration of the self, about love for God. And it's that repetitious beat, you know, the tabla beat, which Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, I think, was the greatest exponents of, it's also liberating. And what we've done, tried to do, is to sort of blend elements of rock music, Sufi poetry. The rhythms that we use are very trance-inducing rhythms, and they make you let go. And for people who've been suppressed and inhibited, you know, and we've gone to rural towns, young girls, boys, they just let themselves go, and it's a really satisfying feeling to just let people, you know, allow themselves to release their inhibitions, you know. Funny thing is that unlike, you know, a lot of rock concerts here where, you know, there's a feeling, aggressive feeling, you know, a lot of times people get aggressive, our music is not about aggression and violence, you know. It just sort of lets you loose, you know, and just get into the spirituality of the message.
I know you're banned from performing in Pakistan, but do you ever play secretly?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're going to do that on the 30th.
I guess it's not a secret.
Not a big secret.
Yeah, it's a fundraiser in somebody's home. We're doing that. They wanted this. There's this non-government organization which wants to raise funds for I think it's cancer research. So they're not publicizing it. They're selling tickets secretly, and we're going to the house and playing.
And what happens when it's not a secret anymore?
You see, I'll tell you, I wouldn't mind being arrested, you know. I mean, what I would like to do, I want to confront the government that, you know, if they are accusing us of treason, then they should, you know, take us to court. You know, why is it that, you know, this browbeating, it's, you know, we live in a democracy, and they should confront us directly. So I think we will be holding concerts publicly, and if they stop us, then, you know, we'll see what happens next.
Brian, do you feel the same way? You wouldn't mind going to prison?
For me, it's a little bit of a different thing. No, I don't agree with the politics in Pakistan, and I choose to stay a little bit further away from it than that, because, I just don't believe in it that strongly. Until we can get a good leader in or whatnot, I don't.
So you don't want to go to prison, but you're putting yourself...
No way. I wouldn't go. I think by doing what we're doing, I think we're taking risks anyway. But no, I have no intentions of landing up in jail.
So you don't think that this quote, secret concert is a big risk for you?
I don't think so. No, I really don't.
Terry, the other thing is that they don't find, you know, although Brian is, you know, he's a member of the band, but he's not the problem for them. We
right,
are.
Right, because you are Pakistani.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, when we went to this hearing, it was the lead vocalist, Ali, and myself who were, you know, talking.
Well, they think I'm a spy for the CIA, so they're getting a little afraid.
Edit that out. I don't give any ideas.
What's wrong with that? They think that. They think a lot of crazy things over there.
Someone, I'd like you to choose a track from your CD that you would like us to close with and to tell us a little bit about the song, composing it, and what the lyrics mean.
Okay. You've got the CD right in front of you. This is the second track on the album, and it's called Meri Awasana, which means hear me, hear my voice. And this song... means a lot to me because it's about freedom. It's about, you know, the lines go, hear me, free me, give me justice. And it's the soul crying out for, you know, the shackled soul crying out for freedom. And I can relate to it personally, and I think a lot of people in India and Pakistan... that feeling resonates within them, you know? And songs, what they do is they articulate feelings which you can't really say. And that's what this song is about. The other interesting thing I can tell you about it is that I was... my inspiration for guitar was Led Zeppelin's guitar player, Jimmy Page. And you'll hear a lot of sort of the Punjabi rhythms juxtaposed with, I think... a little bit of Led Zeppelin in there.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you both very much, and I wish you very good luck.
Thank you for much. Having us.
Salman Ahmad, the founder and guitarist of the Pakistani band Janoon, and Brian O'Connell, the American bass player with the band, spoke with Terry Gross. Their latest CD is Azadi. Coming up, Stravinsky on Stravinsky. This is Fresh Air. Thank you. Igor Stravinsky is nearly everyone's favorite 20th century composer. Classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz says the 20th century wouldn't be the same if it weren't for Stravinsky. Several classic recordings of Stravinsky conducting his own music have been reissued, and Lloyd has a review.
Stravinsky, like Picasso, is one of the artists who defines the 20th century. He made incisive, shifting rhythms and unexpected harmonies a central part of a new musical vocabulary. He preached detachment and hated sentimentality and moralizing. His delicious polytonalities still make some conservatives nervous. Yet his scores are vibrantly colorful and unforgettably tuneful. Mozart may be the only composer who gives me more sheer sensuous pleasure. And along with Mozart, Stravinsky is the composer I most enjoy returning to. Stravinsky himself conducting the witty, ceremonial opening of Pulcinella from a recording he made with the Cleveland Orchestra 45 years ago. The extensive Stravinsky discography on Columbia Records is one of the most important documents in the history of recorded sound. Yet most of his mono recordings from the 1940s and 50s with the New York Philharmonic, then called the Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra, and the Cleveland Orchestra have been out of print for decades. Now Sony's spectacular Masterworks Heritage Series has issued a 2-CD set called Stravinsky Conducts Stravinsky, The Mono Years, which includes some of Stravinsky's best performances. One disc includes the contents of my own most cherished Stravinsky LP, the scintillating Octet for Winds, with the New York Phil's Julius Baker on flute and some amazing trombone playing, and the brilliantly sinister suite from The Soldier's Tale. The British label Pearl has issued other Stravinsky recordings with the New York Philharmonic. A devastating Rite of Spring, Stravinsky's own oddly abbreviated suites from Petrushka and the Firebird, and the post-war symphony in three movements, recorded right after its world premiere. In 1907, the brief pastoral was a wordless piece for soprano. Stravinsky transcribed it half a century later for small chamber group. The players here include the century's greatest violinist, Joseph Sigetti, and a talented young oboist named Mitchell Miller, who achieved greater fame when he invited audiences to sing along with another kind of music. Two sets of Stravinsky conducting Stravinsky are among the greatest recordings ever made of 20th century music. I hope their release means his other legendary recordings from this period will once again see the light of day, maybe even before the 20th century is over.
Lloyd Schwartz is classical music editor of the Boston Phoenix. He reviewed Stravinsky Conducts Stravinsky, the mono years on Sony, and Stravinsky Conducts Stravinsky, the American recordings on Pearl. Fresh Air's interviews and reviews are produced by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, and Naomi Person, with Anne-Marie Baldonado and Monique Nazareth. Audrey Bentham is our engineer. Alan Tu directed the show. For Terry Gross, I'm Marty Moss Cohen.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, a portrait of Afghanistan. We talked to photographer Fazal Sheikh. He has documented the stories of the Afghan refugees who fought Russian rule and then found themselves facing suppression under the Taliban government. Join us for the next Fresh Air.